The closing market report is made possible in part by a grant from Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois, a full-service commodities firm with two toll-free lines. In Illinois, 800-252-2013. In Indiana, 800-637-3123, or email to Cooley at admworld.com.
Welcome to the closing market report for Tuesday, May 29th, 2007. This is Dave Dickey. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana. And we'll have the latest on agricultural weather from Don Day. The balance of the show, we'll talk with the governor of Mato Grosso, who also happens to be the second largest soybean producer on the planet. With the help of two interpreters, Todd Gleason asked about the politics of the Amazon rainforest, as well as the state of soybean production in Mato Grosso. So sit back and enjoy this worldwide edition of the Closing Market Report.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn after corn specialists. Information on the web at agrigold.com or by contacting Regional Sales Manager Scott Williamson at 217-778-6485 for a representative nearest you.
Tuesday afternoon at the Chicago Board of Trade and in Kansas City and at the Merck, prices settled like this. In Kansas City, July wheat, 481, down 8 1/4. September, 493, down 9. At the Chicago Board of Trade, July wheat, 491, down 10. September, 505 1/4, down 9 1/2. December, 516 1/2, down 8 1/2. July corn, 364 3/4, down 11 1/4. September, 367 3/4, down 9 1/2. December, 367 1/2, down 7 1/2. December 2008, 388 1/2, down 5 3/4. July beans, 797 1/2, down 15. August, 805 1/4, down 14 1/4. September, 812 1/2, down 13 3/4. November, 826 3/4, down 14 3/4. July soybean meal, 214.40, down 380. July soybean oil, 35.18, down 66. At the Merck May feeders, at 107.90, down 17 1/2. June live cattle, 91, down 5. And June lean hogs, make that, the June lean hogs, 74.62 1/2. They were up 20 on the day. Joining us now on the telephone to talk about the markets is Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities out of New Market, Indiana. Good afternoon, Wayne.
Why, good afternoon, Dave.
Over the weekend, our featured panelist, Jerry Gulke, said if the weather was right, we would get a 10-cent break on corn today. Man, he shined up his crystal ball pretty well, didn't he?
You know, Jerry hit it closer on the Monday trade than Tuesday trade than he did the Monday night trade, but he was right on target for where we were going to go and what was going to happen. You know, we felt that if we did see the rains, I asked that question of him, sort of felt that way, and it did go ahead and follow through and happen. So Jerry looked pretty sharp.
I suppose that given the break that we saw today, I bet you that buying calls was probably a popular play, was it?
There, you know, there was a lot of activity in the options today, Dave. We saw, you know, just a lot of things happening. A lot of selling out of puts, figuring with all the breaks that they would take profits, that they got as low as they were going to get for a while by some, and other buying of calls in there also. So there was a whole page of the commercials and you know, some of the funds that were doing some very, very big volume in the option bits today.
Let's turn your attention then to the technicals, Wayne, and we look at the July corn. Now it sits pretty close to the April lows, 355.5. The July invaded its 200-day moving average today. Gee whiz, what's the downside from here on in if we have light rain?
I think it's going to depend a lot on the weather forecasts and whether we actually do get some of the rain in some of these areas, Dave. We come into this. The weekend rains were better than expected in many areas. They were as forecast by some, but not by all. We had an overbought technical picture. And, the lower energy prices here as we look at the crude today being down $1.94 while we're talking. So all of that taken into consideration, but we seem to be, should be coming into some pretty solid support down in the, like you said, in the mid 60, 57 to 63 basis, the December corn. And we will see some strong buying or some end user buying in that range, I think, also. We have to remember that everybody is still a lot moisture deficit to their actual normalcy east of the Mississippi. And timely rains are going to be very essential before we take this market down too fast and too hard right here.
I think that NASS will be having their crop progress report at 3 o'clock. And remember, that's a drive-by windshield look, and it probably looks pretty good, but underneath it probably really could use a lot of rain, particularly in the eastern Corn Belt.
Oh, I think that the drive-by, we can probably, as far as the corn ratings, we'll probably drop 1% or 2% here, maybe 3%, just because of the feeling toward the southeast. As we talked to people that did the windshield tour of the southeast from North Carolina on up to Terre Haute, basically they said the yards were brown, but the crop didn't look that bad for the moisture deficit that they have. But we know how much better our crop looked after our 8/10 inch rain we got over the weekend. So, we know that it can look a lot better, but I don't think it's going to drop out of bed today, that's for sure.
Turn your attention to the soybeans, and let me ask you whether or not you think that the action in the price two sessions is putting a double top in this market.
Well, for the meantime, and if the rains continue, yes, it does look a lot like a double top, Dave. I mean, we went up, we backed off. We closed about 14 and three-quarter cents lower today. It's very, very much looking like a double top. But a lot of time, a lot of weather to get through to say that this market has definitely topped or not.
So what are you telling producers today? I'm sure they called you up all day long as they watch the prices slowly drop.
Well, I think, it was one of those things. We told them two things. One of the advisory services today did sell beans, 835 on a straight stop for 30% of their next year's crop beans. And they had stops in a 366 stop close only to sell December corn that did not get hit. And on the other side, we had another advisory service that was telling us we ought to be buying calls at a reduced, at a cheaper rate today because of the setback to protect against the weather premium. And that's pretty much what conflicting advice.
Yes, it is.
And that was the way most farmers felt, that they want to sit on their hands a little bit and see it move another day to see if it does continue to move on down or whatever. Very few farmers were participating in any further sales as of today as to hedge along the way, even with recommendations on the technical side.
Mm. And quickly over the Merc, what did you see today?
Well, I think, we had the premium, the cash premium to the futures and the cattle, but yet the lower cutout rates and the packers being pretty well covered sort of showing you that it was sort of a shuffle both sides and not much going on. And after the big turn down we've seen in the hogs, why a little bit of a rally today was evident, but probably not a lot of follow-through coming in there.
Thank you much, Wayne.
Thank you, Dave.
Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities. He is in New Market, Indiana. Taking a look at Mike Solo's two-state forecast tonight, he says in western Illinois, mostly cloudy with a few showers and isolated thunderstorms possible. Elsewhere, clear to partly cloudy lows from 60 to 65. Tomorrow in western and portions of central Illinois, mostly cloudy with scattered showers and a few thunderstorms. Elsewhere, partly sunny, highs ranging from near 80 in western Illinois to 90 in eastern Indiana. And wind speeds tomorrow, 12 to 24 miles per hour. And the minimum afternoon relative humidity ranging between 35 in eastern Indiana to 60% in western Illinois. Up next, our own Todd Gleason recently sat down with the governor of Mato Grosso, Brazil, to talk about the politics of the Amazon rainforest and soybean production in his state. You'll hear Todd, Governor Blair Almaggi, and a pair of translators.
Did he find as the farm grew that there was a point at which the profit margin per hectare stopped increasing? And where was that?
A questão é que eu acho que essa questão da economia de escala já foi atingido bem mais atrás. Quer dizer, quando você chega num patamar...
What I explore in your question is, ask him if he thinks there is an economy of scale on this. Yeah, I know that the question was that. And he put this very clear, and I'm going to translate this in a very good short, and I'm very interested. Basically, he thinks that basically we cannot... He can crop 250 or half million acres of soybeans, but not just in just one farm. We need to be modular. We need to have pieces of 50,000, 100,000, but all integrated in just one administration. But the farmers cannot be half million in just one piece. It's very hard to do that. You need to create a kind of cells. So basically what we are saying is that there is a
geographic distribution, not
the risk. He's talking more about the management. So there is a scale of economy when you talk about 100,000 acres. Yeah, so and he put this very clear. So.
Okay, the governor is talking about here that the economies of scale, they reached their top far back in the past when they reached around 100,000 hectares of production of soybeans. And they don't really have much more economies of scale from there. However, the type of growth that they're having is not just increasing the acreage, but they have different several units that they operate, and they are sort of independent. They have different. It's the same farm, but there are different units, and each unit is have a separate administration, and they do some of their operations together. But for instance, they buy inputs together, but they use separate machinery, and they have different goals. So although he has a lot of acreage put into production, they have separate units of production.
And so as the economies of scale, at first he was seeing economies of scale as the farm grew, but then he had to divide those farms
exactly
up and to continue to the growth. And now the economies of scale is that the profit margin is in the administration by breaking it into smaller units.
Right. Yeah. You may reach a point where you have these economies of scale. If you have a farm that has, 300,000 hectares, he says that you have economies of scale up to 100,000 hectares. Then you start to break that down into different units so that each unit uses their own machinery and their administration separate, but the only thing they do together is they purchase inputs, but that's about it.
Let's go to politics a little bit now, and I want to talk about China. Does he work with them through the government, Mato Grosso, and through Maggi, both?
Bom, a relação de governo com a China não passa de protocolos de intenção ou de intenções que
basically what he's saying that in the level of the government there is only protocols, and it's worthless, these protocols. People come back and forth, they talk, and nothing happens. on the side of business, he never did. He's not going to do business directly with China. Okay, he put a trader, a trading company in the middle, a Jambo, any company, and they run the risk. He does not know if his personality of China, so he was not able to manage this kind of thing. So he's not doing. For example, they have a problem when they sent a ship, and they want to fight because of the price that has been decided before in a contract. And he said, "Oh, I'm going to cancel this ship." The ship was already in the arriving in China, so he needs to put the price down and said, "No, I'm not going to deal with China anymore."
On that note, does he use the Chicago Board of Trade to manage his risk through Bunge or ADM or whoever he happens to use?
Nessa questão da Bolsa de Chicago, nós operamos direto. Nós temos corretor dentro da Bolsa que nos representa. E fizemos todas as operações.
In the case of soybean, he used two exchanges. He used the CBOT and he has people direct on the floor. And he trades every day. So every day he has trading and giving orders to make positions. So this is on the side of CBOT on soybeans. Now, we have the other factor that is the exchange rate. It's how to internalize the price from CBOT to the inside the country. So then we use the local, the Brazilian stock and the commodity exchange. It's called BMF. So that in there we can do the exchange rate hedge.
We have beans on Chicago and
BMF. BMF, yeah. So we do the exchange rate at BMF and the price at CBOT.
I want to go back to the farm just a bit, and then we'll get to the Amazon as well. Could he farm soybeans? Actually, quick. How many hectares does he farm, and how many are in soybeans, and how many are in corn?
A soja é grande volume nosso. Acho que dos...
Basically, he's saying he's farming right now 200,000 hectares, the farming size, okay, that's what he has. So for the first crop, he has 95% of soybeans and 5% in cotton. So this is the first crop. So because cotton. So he has, for the first crop, he has 95% in soybeans and 5% in cotton. Then the second crop, he harvests the soybean and he put he's putting 190,000 hectares in soybeans, and then he comes as a second crop with 40,000 hectares in corn, and then he leaves some, the other part of the area is not used. No, because the farm is 200,000.
Yeah.
So the first crop he put 10,000 hectares in cotton. 190,000 in soybeans.
Yeah.
Then he harvested the soybean, and cotton is later crop. So he harvested soybean, and from this 190, he cropped more 40,000 in corn as a second crop.
Could he raise soybeans, does he think, without glyphosate? Without Roundup? Without Roundup Ready? Could he raise them? How easy has it made it to raise soybeans? And is
are you talking about the
Roundup GMO? Ready from Monsanto, yes, the GMO beans. I'm making the assumption he does plant so GMO beans or Roundup Ready beans, glyphosate resistant.
Um pouquinho ainda. Se usa no sul do estado, pequenas áreas.
Desses 190 mil hectares, quantos hectares?
Ah, tem 10 mil hectares só de transgênico.
So from this 190,000 hectares of soybean that he crop every year, just 10,000 hectares is GMO. Everything else is conventional. Yeah.
Eu falei ontem sobre isso. As variedades de soja.
There's a lot of variability of the weather in the west central of Brazil. So variety has been a very big issue, and sometimes we don't have variety that are GMOs. So he needs to keep the conventional. But the place that he can use the GMOs, he's using GMOs. But what's happening, the GMOs, the new varieties for the West Center that is developed by the MIT Foundation, is just coming out.
Now back to politics, and I think we'll stay with that through the end of this very quickly. What did he think when they gave him the Golden Chainsaw Award?
Continuo com o mesmo pensamento. Não passou de uma brincadeira.
Yeah, this the gold saw that he received in that moment was given for two guys that it was a kind of joke. And this joke came all the world. For example, for this year, the people that received the gold saw was the government. It's the institute that control all the deforestation in the country, and nothing happened. So because in that moment, so he was a kind of used in that situation. So, but he has no problem. So he's still keeping the same idea, and the presentation that he did at the seminar yesterday was very clear.
How hard is it for him to balance the economic growth of Mato Grosso based on the agricultural underpinnings of it against preservation of the Amazon and pressure that he gets from the external world?
Veja bem, nós precisamos ter controle do que efetivamente vem sendo feito. Agora, mais uma vez, quero dizer, eu não posso proibir de se fazer aquilo que o cidadão tem direito de fazer.
Basically, what he's saying is that we don't have a set-aside problem in Brazil. Okay? So, and at this moment, what's happening is the laws are running and they allow them to do deforestation. Okay? It's not him, he's not going. So, farmers are allowed to do 20% or 80% of his farms. But he's really pushing right now, and this has been the big effort right now, is to develop a set aside program to the Brazilian farmers so that they can receive some money for them for not deforestation.
He suggested yesterday, and I think this is the right follow-up question, that he wants the outside world to help. Does he want them to pay for that?
Eu acho que isso não é um papel do governo brasileiro, até porque o governo brasileiro também precisa dos recursos naturais.
Yeah, in his mind, he thinks that the world needs to be engaged in this discussion. Okay? How will be the effect this of... Could you imagine that you could have a mechanism of price, that the price of the soybean that's coming from that region will have a big premium or something? It's not clear yet, but he thinks that if the world wanted to have that to stop the deforestation in Brazil, they need to be engaged on that. I don't know. I don't know how, but the state does not have money. The government does not have money. If we leave as it is, it's going to keep going the deforestation. It cannot have control because the law allows them to deforest.
He realizes that there will be part, yeah, this is the last one, that part of the world will say, the part that gave him the golden chainsaw will say, Maji cut down the rainforest, now he's holding it hostage. It's not a question. Well, it's sort of, but that's what that
he
part of the...
Point is, so it's
I mean, again. When I heard him say that yesterday,
uh-huh.
I thought, my first thought was, the environmentalist in the room, if they understood what he thought, what he said, are going to say, he started to clear it, now he's holding it hostage, and saying, I'll clear more if you don't pay.
Yeah.
I understand that that's not what he's
uh-huh.
what he's looking at, but that's the world he's facing.
Uma coisa é certa, o Estado não tem como proibir mais do que já proibiu.
Basically, the state does not have more way to stop this. He already stopped 80% of a farm. Do you remember, if I have a farm that is 100%, so 80% they are not allowed to deforest, but they can deforest the other 20%. So this is allowed by law, and he cannot go further than that. This is the max. The state does not have money. The federal government does not have money. So we are in a kind of in a cross right now, where we are going from here. Okay?
Coloco meu problema nas tuas mãos, então.
Yeah, what he's saying that I'm going to put the problem in your hands, and then you are going to help us. And this is what he's putting. He's bringing this on the debate. The whole debate, he's put this on the table. And everybody say, okay, this is what we have done. So we have done our part on the state is to try to control the deforestation by law. This is what we are doing. And...
But today, É interessante, talvez eles ficam olhando na ótica como se fosse eu, o cidadão que está querendo desmatar. Eu não quero, não tenho mais área para isso. Mas tem os outros produtores, os menores, que precisam disso para sobreviver. É, essa é a questão, não é para mim.
Em seu grupo, ele não tem nenhuma área para abrir mais. Tudo está aberto by the law. The whole problem is are the other farmers around that you don't have control. And they are entering, they are buying, and they are doing the business. So they need to survive. And how to control this. And he's doing by law, but I think we need to do kind of more push, maybe. And this is what's happening. So the environmental people, the media is over, so it's all this discussion. It's all time. They are... Peter, all time we are saying that customers are driving what farmers are doing. So we are in this middle, and I think we need to have an agenda to fight for this. Not customer deciding what farmers are doing, but also what farmers want to do.
That was the governor of Mato Grosso, Brazil, Blair Omaggi. He also happens to be the second largest soybean grower on the planet. That's right, the second largest. There is one man with a bigger farm in Brazil. Todd had the opportunity to spend a couple of days with Governor Maggi when he visited the United States last month.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Jim Meadows. Negotiations continue tomorrow between officials at Danville's Bunge Milling Plant and the United Steelworkers Union, Local 972. A negotiator for the union representing 220 workers at the Bunge plant say all they want is an adequate raise in a new contract. Tim Spearing says workers need more pay to cover rising prices for gasoline and groceries, but he says health insurance and pensions are the biggest stumbling blocks in negotiations that have been going on since February. The current contract between Bunge and Local 972 expires on Thursday. U.S. Senator Barack Obama says rising health care costs have put families and businesses on a collision course with financial ruin, and he says he has a plan to prevent that. The Democratic presidential candidate and Illinois senator today proposed a universal health care plan that would carry an estimated cost of at least $50 billion a year. Champaign police are investigating a shooting last night in the city's northwest side. Shots were reported in the 1300 block of Hedge Road about 10:30 p.m. Two men in their 20s were found wounded. One was taken to Carl Foundation Hospital. The other drove himself to Provena Covenant Medical Center. No information about suspects in the shootings is available. Meanwhile, Champaign police have arrested one of two men sought in a home invasion and shooting that occurred last week. 20-year-old Joseph Reed of Urbana was arrested Saturday outside a downtown nightclub. He's charged with home invasion with a firearm and being held on a $250,000 bond. Police say Reed and another suspect broke into an apartment in the Dobbins Down neighborhood last week and shot two men. The Indiana Court of Appeals says the state had no justification in waiting 12 years to file charges in a fatal prison stabbing. The decision today overturns Ralph Barnett's voluntary manslaughter conviction and his 30-year prison sentence. A trucker accused of causing a crash along I-69 in Indiana that killed five people from Taylor University has changed his plea to guilty. 38-year-old Robert Spencer of Canton Township, Michigan, is pleading guilty to five counts of reckless homicide and four counts of criminal recklessness in the April 2006 crash. I'm Jim Meadows, AM 580 News.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from First Midwest Bank, serving the banking needs of Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Doug Slayton in Galesburg at 309-341-5003. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
Don Day is unavailable this afternoon, but Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated passes the following forecast along. He says the biggest change since Friday is the slower arrival of this week's storm system into the Midwest. The slower movement of the storm also allows heavier rain to impact the northern plains and northwestern Corn Belt. Restricted rain will occur in the eastern Midwest until this weekend and early next week, when rain should increase as a cool front finally pushes through the region. Rainfall in the central and southeastern Midwest will not be nearly as great as that in the northwest, but most areas will get rain at one time or another. Net drying is expected in many eastern Midwest locations, through Friday, despite some shower activity. Taking a look at Mike Sola's two-state forecast tonight. He says in western Illinois, mostly cloudy with a few showers and isolated thunderstorms. Elsewhere, clear to partly cloudy, lows to 60 to 65. Then tomorrow, in western and portions of central Illinois, mostly cloudy with scattered showers and a few thunderstorms. Elsewhere, partly sunny, highs ranging from near 80 to 90 degrees. And that is today's closing market report. Be sure to tune in tomorrow morning at 8:49 for our first in-depth look at the day's markets. This is Dave Dickey.